We're looking at the grim realities of climate change and getting a perspective on why we can't turn this ship around, heal our planet, right? It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And together with our colleagues at To the Best of Our Knowledge, The Morning Show has been exploring hope, where it comes from, how to make it, and how to move forward when there is none. And even looking for hope in the chaos of our times as we get a perspective here on climate change. Are you hopeful about the future of our planet and our environment? Why? How might society be impacted by climate change? What concerns you? Do you have hope humanity will act in time, or is it too late? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Roy Scranton is a writer. He's the author of the book, We're Doomed. Now What? He teaches English at the University of Notre Dame. His work focuses on the themes of climate change and war. Roy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on, Kate.
We see it in the movies so often. We imagine the apocalypse, the end of civilization, beginning with some big, you know, catastrophe, a boom. Why do you believe that's the wrong way to think about the climate crisis?
Yeah, so going back, centuries even, we tend to have this idea that that the apocalyptic event is going to be this moment of transformation, after which there will be some kind of new normal, right? Even if it's dystopian, but there will be a new situation that a new steady state that we adjust to. But that's, I think, the wrong way to look at climate change, to think about it, for a couple of reasons. The first is that it's not an event that's happening. It's not a single moment, right? Climate change, as it's unfolding, is going to take decades and centuries, and it's a process, right? And there's not likely to be a new steady state that we are able to adjust to for a very long time, probably generations or who knows. This is one of the scary things about climate change, is that in the planet's history, never before has so much carbon been dumped into the atmosphere so quickly. So we're really not exactly sure what's going to happen, but it's likely that this is going to be an unfolding process for a very long time. And the other aspect, the other reason why our traditional thinking about an apocalyptic event isn't helpful, is that it's not something that we're looking forward to. It's not something that's going to happen. We're in it already, right? So we're already living in a world that has been radically transformed by human beings, by global warming, and we're seeing how that's happening. So it's not something that just happens and then we adjust, and it's not something we're waiting for. It's a long, complicated process that we're living right now.
Your essays lay out exactly why we are doomed, and your writing focuses on the themes of war. It focuses on climate change. You give us those facts, the rising seas and all the other stuff, dire topics. How did you get to this point? How did you start to understand and really embrace the fact that we're doomed?
So when I was much younger, I'd been a climate activist and an environmental activist and was into that stuff. But then I went away from that, and I spent some time in the army and then went back to school. And then I was writing about veterans issues and war, and my experience in Iraq. And it was really only recently, relatively recently, I'd say 2012, 2013, that I had the chance to attend a summer seminar on the idea of the Anthropocene. And I was trying to think about another project about World War II and this kind of sense of global catastrophe. And through that seminar, and in preparing, doing my homework, as it were, for that seminar, I read up on the World Bank reports up to that date, and the reports from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and books by leading scientists, and what they said shocked me, and and threw me back on my heels, because what they were saying was that if we continue living the lives that we lead, if we continue business as usual, economically, politically, socially, that civilization is likely to be doomed, right? Because of because of global warming, because of the intense ecological and environmental changes caused by the amount of carbon in the atmosphere and various other things that we've done.
And right? That's all. Yeah, and the word Anthropocene comes up quite a bit in your book.
Yeah.
Help us put some parameters around what you mean, Anthropocene.
Right. So the concept of the Anthropocene is somewhat novel and somewhat contentious, but it's fundamentally an idea that's been put forward by geologists who are arguing that the Earth has entered a new geological time period, right? Like, you know, the Paleozoic or the Holocene, which we were most recently in, right? Geologists mm-hmm. name different periods in the Earth's history. And they argue that we've entered a new period that it can be defined by the mark or by the signal that human beings have left on the Earth. And they've been talking about when they might say this period has started. There's consensus among the geologists who decide these things that we are in a new period distinct from the Holocene, which is the previous 11,000 years or so. And they're sort of trying to figure out exactly when it starts. They're looking at the middle of the 20th century because of a variety of factors, including radiation and other clear evidence, right? Other things that signal precisely or would signal to, you know, some imaginary geologist millennia in the future, right? Looking at the geological record, that something huge happened that changed the geology, changed the climate, changed the very makeup of the planet that we live on.
Basically, going back to when did we start messing with the planet, making a footprint, making an impact?
Right. But it's even more radical than that, because human beings have been messing with the planet since we've been, you know, part of the biosphere, and which is connected to the atmosphere, which is connected to the hydrosphere, right? We've been part of that since there have been humans. You know, it's likely that the mass extinctions of, you know, large animals like mastodons and whatnot, thousands and thousands of years ago, that was caused by humans. And this was why there was this argument about when to mark the beginning of the Anthropocene. But the reason why they settled on the mid-20th century is because the changes that we've caused to the planet in the last 70 years, even, but definitely in the last century, are on a completely other scale. What we've done is we've interfered with the basic, like, carbon, the basic geomechanical and chemical dynamics of the planet we live on, right? We've taken all this carbon out of the Earth, tons, millions, you know, thousands and thousands of tons of this carbon, and dumped it into the sky, which completely changes how everything works.
Pause right there with author Roy Scranton. You can join in 800-642-1234. Do you think fears about climate catastrophe are overblown, or are they unheeded? What policies would you like to see on a national or international level? What solutions do you think we have? Call in, email ideas, WPR.org. We'll get back to this discussion in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the calamity of climate change. Where do we go from here? And this is the final installment of our conversations around hope, and it's been a collaboration with our colleagues, that's to the best of our knowledge. The book is called We're Doomed, Now What? Roy Scranton writes, we must act now as flawed, failed, flailing selves. At the same time, the situation we find ourselves in is beyond our power to change. The planet will get warmer, the ice caps will melt, the seas will rise. The global fossil-fueled consumer capitalist civilization we'll live in will come to an end. So what do you think? We're at 800-642-1234. Millennials and Gen Zers, we'd like to hear from you as well. How do you envision your future as you see climate change? Are you worried? Have you taken action? Or does it not impact your future plans and thoughts? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings, and author Roy Scranton stays with us as our guide to understanding the enormity of climate change. We have a Facebook post from Lisa who says she's encouraging her family to make a plan, told the kids to get a plot of land, raise some food, can, preserve. She says stockpile water. She buys them self-sufficiency books and magazines. They know how to hunt fish and grow food and cook. They even have a meeting spot for super emergencies. So as you hear that, Roy, how do you see Lisa's view about the climate and what she is preparing for?
There's a great change coming, and it's already happening, right? We already see changes in the weather and the climate, and we already see second order political effects that are happening because of that. Climate refugees, connections to war and civil strife. We're living in the early stages of a massive transformation in human life as we know it. And it's totally understandable to want to respond to this change and this anxiety by doing something practical. I don't know. It's hard to know what kinds of practical things might be effective when we're talking about a global ecological transformation. But that's one way to approach it is to think about, how to make your life more sustainable, right? How to live more sustainably, whether that's like you buy a plot of land and you grow a garden, or whether that's working on organizing local communities, working on organizing response groups locally to be able to address emergencies and disasters when a storm hits or a fire hits or the ocean rises and, the government's not able to come in or doesn't, step in to help, as in Puerto Rico. We're going to need to depend on each other more and more as things begin to crumble around us. So, we have to think practically about what's happening, but we also need to think about it philosophically, if you will, or spiritually. We need to start to really emotionally even come to terms with and accept the fact that what we think of as the good life, what we think of as a normal life, is no longer the status quo, right?
You mean like the American dream, two cars, couple kids, retirement, those
yeah.
things?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the American dream, quote unquote, has already taken a hit in recent. I'm a Gen Xer, if you will. And I think, that dream has been in trouble for a while. But even, even the idea that like life is basically peaceful and secure and that you can look forward to getting old in the kind of stable environment, like even that is no longer really necessarily true, right? We're going to be facing increasing precarity, increasing dangers, increasing chaos ecologically and politically. So we need to come to terms with, even the seasons, right? The seasons are changing, where they're not dependable the way that they were. The weather that we were once accustomed to, the changing, the changing of the leaves and the trees and the birds and when the snow comes and when the ice melts, all of this is changing. And we need to take the time, right, to reckon with that before we can really, really begin to think about adapting to the new and changing world that we've created.
Well, let's take a call now. Let's go to Monica in Waukesha. Hi, Monica.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And thank you for this. Very interesting. And I think sometimes as listeners, I encourage all of the listeners not to take the attitude of, oh, this is too big. There is nothing I can do. I'm just going to ignore it. Every time that we choose sustainability, every time that we choose to compost instead of putting organics in the garbage, every time that we decide to use something we can wash instead of using, you know, just single-use materials like forks and knives for one time and putting them in the garbage, every time that we do things like that, we are working together to slow down a human process, and we are making a difference, and maybe, just maybe, we can create a tipping point. There are apps out there that help us better understand the impact that we are doing by driving, by consuming.
So Monica is saying, don't look the other direction, still make individual changes in your life, Roy.
A lot of people are hanging on to this idea that, if I compost, if I recycle, if I take a bike instead of driving, if I eat, cut out beef and pork in my diet, that what I do added to presumably what other people might be doing is going to be able to have some kind of significant effect that's going to slow down this global process. And I don't think that's really the case. I do think it's important what we do individually from an ethical standpoint, but I think it's frankly misguided to look at this complex global event that is being driven by systemic behaviors, not just in the United States, but in China, in India, in Russia and Europe, all over the world, right? Because of the economic systems that we live in and our energy and resource use, right? This is a global issue. To think that whether or not I compost is going to make a difference, I think is mistaken. This caller mentions using apps to track your carbon footprint. Well, the apps, right, are on phones, which require the extraction of rare earth minerals to create, are enormously wasteful when it comes to their carbon footprint, and are wired into this network that depends on massive energy use, right? So, like, even the tools that we have to try to live a more sustainable life within this capitalist fossil fueled economy are the very things that are going to destroy us, right? So I appreciate that response, and I feel a great sympathy for it. But at the same time, we have to face the fact that the problems are systemic and global and beyond any one individual.
You had certainly a turning point at the birth of your daughter. You were happy for her, but as you looked out the window in that hospital room and saw the concrete and the strip malls, you felt sorrow. Can you take us to that moment?
Yeah. It's the birth of my daughter. It was a huge event, quite emotional. I was crying. It was a long labor. My wife had gone through, it was like 25 hours or something of labor. And finally our daughter, who we've been looking forward to for a long time, she arrives and she's a baby. She's so beautiful, all this stuff. And I was in tears. And then I looked out the window a few minutes later, and there's this strip mall, and there's parking lots, and there's concrete, and you know, and I see this world, the human world that we've made that has dominated and despoiled and destroyed and is profoundly changing the natural world that we live in. And knowing what I know about what we've done to the climate, I cried for sorrow for the fate that she will face in this changing world.
Author Roy Scranton is our guide, exploring his concepts through the lens of hope and where we might see human resilience, but where we see this unraveling planet. You can join us at this intersection, 800-642-1234. Stay with us. News Update is next here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show as we look at climate change, and we're at this odd intersection of pessimism about our unraveling climate and hope for future generations. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Climate scientists, they paint a grim picture, and author Roy Scranton writes that it's a tired story at this point. Waste carbon dioxide from burned fossil fuels is accumulating in the atmosphere, trapping solar energy, which is warming the planet at an astonishing rate. He says this global warming is radically transforming environmental conditions all over the planet, leading to a range of second-order effects, including rising seas, destabilized crop yields, mass extinction. It is intense, hard to hear, especially for our kids. Getting your thoughts along the way, 800-642-1234. Are you concerned about climate change for the sake of your children or grandchildren? What lifestyle changes have you made? Did you make the decision to not reproduce because of a potentially grim future? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org, and author Roy Scranton's book is called We're Doomed, Now What? Let's go to the phones now with Josh joining us from Oak Creek. Hi, Josh.
Hi, interesting topic. Before I say what I'm going to say, I'm going to tell you I absolutely agree with having a plan of action for something. But something in the now, not something that could happen. And I guess the only question I have for your guest is, in history, it's been well proven that we can't and still don't know how to control weather. It certainly has been proven that in history, climate change, tornadoes, earthquakes, you name it, ice ages, they come and we deal with it or we die, you know, and we're always picking up the aftermath. So I know you were talking about plots of land and prepping for this, and my kids and I have a safety zone in case there's a house fire, but that's in the now. How do you know where to go get your plot of land? How do you know it's not going to be under an ice age sheet or in the middle of a desert, which once was Wisconsin? I it's too premature to be wondering what you're going to do, I guess is my point.
Roy, you know, these things come, we deal or die.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I've been looking lately at work by scholars, particularly the historian Jeffrey Parker, on the little ice age that happened in the 16th and 17th century, which affected the world and significantly Europe, but also China and other places, and very probably caused massive social and political instability, largely through famines and food insecurity, that led to somewhere between a third or maybe half of the human population at the time dying. So yeah, we adapt or we die. And you know, your caller is right that it's difficult, if not impossible, to know exactly how to, you know, where to buy your plot of land or how to prepare for the situation. This is one of the major challenges we face with climate change is that we don't know. We have some idea of how the dynamics are going to unfold. We know what the general trend is going to be, but we don't really know the specifics. When it comes to something like catastrophic ice sheet collapse, right, that's happening in Antarctica right now, we've never seen that before, and it's hard to read in the geological record whether it happens in decades or whether it happens in centuries, right? So we could very possibly see several feet of sea level rise within our lifetime. So, you know, your caller says, you know, what do we do now? And we don't know what'll happen in the future. And that's true. And yet at the same time, you know, we should probably move away from the coast, right? We should really take this seriously and adjust to those things that we can know and we can see are going to happen. Places like cities like Miami, I mean, Miami should be abandoned, right? All those people should move somewhere else. It's easy for me to say. It's much more difficult to do.
Cities like New Orleans are dealing with that right now.
Precisely. But this is part of what's so challenging and terrifying about this changing world that we're in, is that the future is unknown, right? Is that we know it's going to be bad, but we can't know exactly how bad or how fast or in what ways. And what that means fundamentally is that nowhere is safe. There is no safe space. There's nowhere we can go where we can be assured that it's not going to touch us. There's no wall that we can build that's going to protect us from the chaos that we've created.
Let's go to Eric now in Kenosha with thoughts. Eric, hi, what's on your mind?
I would like to know what, if any, consideration in his theories the author has taken into consideration with respect to sun science, solar flare, sunspots, massive energy discharges from the sun to the earth, the cycles of the sun and how it has affected climate historically, and where that fits in, if it fits in anywhere, to his view of climate change and how the climate may change as a result of that.
Thank you, Eric. What is, Roy, the influence of the sun?
Yeah, thanks, Eric. And first of all, I want to clarify that these aren't my theories about the climate. I'm working with scientific papers and books by scientists. I'm working with the evidence that climate scientists and geologists and ecologists have put out into the world. So I'm working with their hypotheses and their facts and their observed data to try to make sense of this changing world that we live in. And from what I understand, from what the science seems to tell us, is that all other things being equal, given the Earth's orbit around the sun and the way that relates to climate trends over long periods of geological time, we would be entering slowly into a cooling period, right? We would, all other things being equal, the Earth would be moving into a period of ice age, over a very long period of time. But because of the amount of carbon we've extracted from the Earth and dumped into the atmosphere and the warming effect caused by that, we've completely upset that natural, if you will, that solar cycle. We've completely upset that and very probably bumped the Earth out of that cooling period into what is more likely to be a long-term period of intense and catastrophic warming. So, the Earth's relationship with the sun is super important, and we've managed to. This is part of why what's happening is so astonishing. We've managed to hijack the solar system. We've managed to hijack the Earth's relationship with the sun in a certain way, right? By changing the composition of the atmosphere.
So in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking to a 17-year-old climate activist from Madison. Teenagers around the world, they've been marching, they've been organizing, encouraging action on climate change. We've seen in Congress the progressives and the Green New Deal. Do you think a younger generation gives you hope that they may be able to turn this around at all?
I feel very heartened or I feel for the younger generation and I cheer their courage and their bravery and their willingness to look the problem in the face. But I'm also saddened by the fact that all their effort and all their energy is coming up against dug-in, entrenched political and economic structures that so far have stymied all efforts for change and are likely to continue to do so because, surprise, that's who has the power, right, are these entrenched interests. I would love to believe that we lived in a functional democracy where mass social action by committed citizens could really change things. That doesn't seem to be the case empirically. That doesn't seem to be the way things work. And so there's just a lot of mixed emotions for me when I look at these kids who are facing this future. I mean, this is the next generation before my daughter just born, right? Who see what's happening and are acting with courage and engagement and doing all the things that they've been told they're supposed to do and probably going to fail.
You know, your book is not one that really concludes or has a conclusion. How do you leave your book behind and work on new writing projects as a writer?
That's a great question, and it's something I'm struggling with. The big thing that I struggle with right now, as I think about what new projects to undertake, is whether to continue committing to this message. Continue my Jeremiah and carrying my sign around saying that we're doomed, or rather. Work towards something more personal or maybe work toward something that might possibly preserve some aspect of human culture or history from the past into the future, whatever future that might be.
Roy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kate. It's been a pleasure.
Roy Scranton is a writer, author of We're Doomed, Now What? He teaches at the University of Notre Dame. His work focuses on the themes of climate change and war. Coming up, we'll talk with a high school student about her activism and how she approaches our warming planet. Stay with us for that conversation here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about what the climate crisis looks like now through the eyes of Gen Z, a young person. How do you live ethically in a broken world? Is the world really broken, or do you have hope for the future generations? 800-642-1234 is our number. Lydia Hester is a junior at Madison East High School. She's an activist on the issues of climate change and gun control, and she recently ran a successful Madison City Council campaign. Lydia, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So you're a junior in high school. You just ran this city council campaign. You rally all the time on climate change, gun control. How did this happen? When did you start activism?
So that's a good question. It's sort of a complicated question as well, because living in Madison, I feel like I've always been around activism. When I was about 8 years old, I experienced Act 10, where we were out of school for 2 weeks, and I marched at the Capitol with my parents. I've just always had a view of activism and political engagement. But then when I started high school, I really saw how important the youth voice was and how critical it was that I started to use my voice in the political world.
So when you see the news reports on global warming, on climate change, and its impact on our planet, how can we get through the day knowing this climate crisis is happening? How do you get through your day?
It can be really hard, you know, knowing that we're putting in all this work to better our future, and, you know, also just in school doing all this work for our future, but it's hard knowing that we might not have that future if the climate continues to change and the temperature continues to rise. It's just hard as a student to see the work not being done when we can clearly see how critical this issue is.
Lydia, are there difficult conversations that you have in your science classes about climate, or difficult conversations that you have with your friends?
Most definitely, yeah. I'm in this year, as a junior, I'm in an AP Environmental Studies class where we talk about climate every day, and we learn, like, firsthand how these issues are facing us. I mean, we've talked about how the flooding in Wisconsin last summer, why that happened and why how it directly ties into climate change. So, yeah, we're having those conversations as young people, and we can see clearly the changes of climate change. And so we often talk about how strange it is that many politicians who are in the way of the legislation that could go into place to help with slowing down this climate change, how they just don't see the urgency.
Do you feel urgent? Are you inspired to act?
Most definitely, yeah. It's just when we got that report last year about how we have about 12 years to reverse climate change, that is, that's more than 12 years is, you know, not that far away in my future. I will be just starting a career at that time. So that feels very urgent to me, and it doesn't feel like it's that hard of a concept to understand that we have 12 years, and that we need to put our own personal needs and wants behind the climate, it just takes a small step from everyone to accept that we need to take action now.
We're talking with Lydia Hester, and she's a high school student in Madison working on issues of climate change, on issues of gun control. This morning, by the way, she'll participate in a youth climate strike at the Capitol Rotunda to encourage the Wisconsin legislature to work toward 100% renewable energy in the state. You can join in on this at 800-642-1234. Lydia, people your age, they are in the headlines all over the world doing activism. We've seen the Parkland students. We've seen a Swedish climate activist giving speeches to parliaments, inspiring international marching. Where do you see the work you and your fellow students are doing fitting into the global view here?
Yeah, so Greta Thunberg, the Swedish activist, has been making headlines all over the world, and just she is helping to lift up the voices of the students, which has definitely helped us here in Wisconsin to just show that the students are at the forefront of this movement. And yeah, all around Wisconsin and around the country, there are students who are working every day to raise awareness. And because that is what we can do in our power, is to raise awareness, especially for the those who will be voting very soon. I saw a headline yesterday that just in 2018 or in 2019, 400 million new voters were going to be in the 2020 election. And the young people are seeing what is going on, and they are going to vote to ensure that climate is a priority. And yeah, all around the world, there are people taking notice to the young people, which has not happened in recent history. And it's an exciting time to know that our voices can be heard.
Well, Lydia, let's pause here a moment, because you're super engaged on politics. You've run a campaign, you organize on the issues you're passionate about, but you can't vote yet. What do you think about that?
It can be really hard when I, you know, work so hard on these issues and then can't even vote for them. And people who say that they cannot vote, it really frustrates me. Not that they cannot vote, but that they will not vote. It really frustrates me because they're wasting that voice that they have when many people who would like to be able to vote don't even get the chance. There are many young people that are far more engaged and knowledgeable about the issues who don't even get to vote, when there are many people who have that civic duty of voting and they don't even use it, or they don't think about the people who it will actually affect in the future. And yeah.
So what is the goal of the sit-in at the Capitol Rotunda this morning?
So I gave the wrong date of the sit-in. I realize it is actually on Friday.
Okay.
And yeah, so there will be students in the rotunda who will be chanting to ensure that the whole legislature and Senate in the Capitol hear our voices and hear that the youth are not going to sit down on this issue, and that we will be showing up at every event that needs, you know, our voices, and we will not let politicians get away with ignoring the issue of climate change.
Lydia, as we let you go here, high school is a busy time, AP classes, sports, just the whole juggling of stuff. How much time do you devote to activism?
It depends on definitely the month and week. I do have a lot of hard classes and you know, have like college to think about. So a lot of my time is spent on activism, especially like when I was running the city council campaign. But I sort of just have to figure out how I can incorporate it into my life.
It's who you are.
Possible.
Yeah.
So
thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Lydia Hester is a junior at Madison East High School, and she's an activist on the issues of climate change, gun control. She recently ran a Madison City Council campaign, and this Friday she will participate in a sit-in at the Capitol Rotunda. By the way, together with our colleagues at to the Best of Our Knowledge, the morning show has been exploring hope, where it comes from, how to make it, and you can visit ttbook.org/hope. To hear more from Roy Scranton, Lydia Hester, and a hive of other writers, scientists, futurists, theologians, all talking about the concept of hope. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.